Okay, we're beginning here at the bottom of Gimel Amud Bet, about a third of the way up. Itmar, kupa shenishtamshu ba tarot bezavit zo, v'nimtzeret sheretz bezavit acheret. They're using this basket, and they find a sheretz on one side of the basket, but they were using the other part of the basket for the taharot. So the person who was taking things in and out wouldn't necessarily bumped into something what was on the other side. Chizki amar tarot arishonot tehorot, that the original tarot that were there are tehorot, meaning that we assume that the sheretz that's there now and discovered now affects that which is in the kupa, or that which he's working with now. That which was prior was tahor, we assume it wasn't there beforehand. Yochan amar tarot arishonot tmeot. Yochan says, lemafreya, retroactively, we assume that the sheretz was there when he did the other tarot. The only thing is that he didn't see it. He wasn't aware of it because he was working on the other side of the kupa, on the other side of the basket. V'ha, Shammai v'Hillel, modu b'kupa, did taharot harishonot t'meot. Didn't Shammai and Hillel both agree that when you have a kupa with tarot, that we look at that retroactively and that it is t'meot? That's based on what we saw above in the Braita, where Beit Hillel questions the position of Shammai. Shammai says that daya shatan, that with regards to a woman, there is no retroactive tuma. And then they challenge Shammai from a case of kupa. And it says, Amar lo Hillel l'Shammai, yeta mode b'kupa, shenivtashu ba tarot b'zavit zov, nimtza sheret b'zavit acheret, shetarot harishonot meot. Don't you agree with that position that there is tuma the mafreya? And then Shammai responds and says there's a big difference, because the case of tarot, or the case of kupa, is a case where yesh l'shulayim, it has a base. Zu ain't l'shulayim. On the other hand, the woman has no base under her, and therefore it would have been obvious if the dam came out, there's nowhere for it to be besides out of the woman. On the other hand, by the sheretz, it's possible that the sheretz is hanging out at the base of the basket, and you missed it when you poured it out. But that means that Shammai agrees by the case of a basket that there is tuma de mafreya. So if they agree that there's tuma de mafreya, that means if Shammai and Hillel both agreeing that there's tuma de mafreya, then where's this machloket of Chizki and Rav Yochanan? They're not arguing on Tanaim. Kimode Shammai ve'Hillel b'kubash yesh l'shulayim. The case of Shammai ve'Hillel, as we saw in the answer of Shammai to Hillel, it's talking about a kupa that has a base to it. Since it has a base to it, it's possible that the sheretz got caught in the base, and it affected all the tarot until now, and you missed it when you were pouring out the tarot from the other side. Kipligei Chizki v'Rav Yochanan mekupa she'en l'shulayim. They're arguing about a case where there is no base on the kupa. So the Gemara says, "Ein la shulayim." If it has no base, my time is the Rabbi Yochanan. Then why does Rabbi Yochanan think it's tameh? If it has no base, and you're working on one side, and then the other side is there, then how did the sheretz get caught in the kupa? I mean, it's obvious that the sheretz came now and wasn't there beforehand because of the fact that there's no base to the kupa in which the sheretz could have been caught or stuck in the time that you were working in the other half of the kupa. The way that Tosafot explains it over here, Tosafot says, they have a kupa, shein la shulayim sh'as, mishtamshim ba kashihi mushkevet. Then you use it while it's lying down. Kupahi mirubat. It says all kupot are squared out. Mishtamshim ba l'rochba. And you use it on its width. The way that Balei HaTosafot explained this is, if you have a kupa agula, if you have a circular kupa, then even Rabbi Yochanan is going to agree that the rishonot are teorot, because everything's in front of you. Everything's obvious that you can see. You're looking at a base of something, even if it's missing its base. But the case here is a case, it's a kupa mirubat, squared out, and it's missing its shulayim. The way Tosafot explains it is that you utilize it on its side. You turn the kupa on its side, and then you use the side, the squared out side, in order to use its function. My time at the Rabbi Yochanan. So then if we don't have any base to it, what's the reason behind Rabbi Yochanan? And again, we said Tosafot says you're using it on its side, but still you need somewhere where the sheretz could get trapped when he's pouring the items out of the kupa. If it's still open, then there's nowhere to get trapped. So the Gemara says that it's en la shulayim v'yesh la uganim. It does not have shulayim, but has a lip to it. So even though it doesn't have a base to it, there is some sort of lip that's folded in which the sheretz could have been caught when he was pouring this stuff out on one side. And then the usage or utility that he has on one side could then make it that he doesn't see the other side where there's this, again, where there's this lip. And then the sheretz got caught on the lip. V'hatanyo, and we have a Braita. It happens to be a Mishnah as well in Taharot. And Tosfot discusses over here why the Gemara did not quote that Mishnah in Taharot, and rather the Braita, because there's certain pieces of information in the Braita that add to what we're saying over here, and therefore the Gemara brought it as a Braita rather than a Mishnah. Hamadla asarad li'im mayim. Someone who takes a bucket of water, and he keeps filling it with water and dumping it into a larger basin, into a larger receptacle. So he did this, b'zeh achar zeh, one after the next. B'nipsa sheretz be'achad mehem. And then, on the tenth one, he looks into the bucket, and sure enough, there's a sheretz sitting in the bucket. Hutamei v'kulan tehorim. And that one is tamei, but the remainder of them were tehorim. Meaning that the first nine times that you poured it out, then it wasn't a problem. It's only on this tenth time that you found it that the waters there are tmeim. V'amareish lakish mishum rabbi yanai, lo shanu el she'en la oganim. That's only true if it doesn't have a lip. Avayesh la oganim kulan tmeim. If it has a lip, then all of them are tmeim. This is corroborating this idea that Rabbi Yochanan is putting forth, which is that the ogan makes a difference. When you have a lip, there's a place where the sheretz could get trapped. And since the sheretz could get trapped, it could be that you missed it in the first couple of times because it was stuck by the ogen. Then all of a sudden, when you see it on the tenth time, it got released. It's now inside of the bucket. There's something there that made it that it was not visible to you in every instance. And also possible that when you poured out whatever was in there, the sheretz stayed inside the bucket and didn't come flying out, so you didn't see it. So Gemara says, well, leima chizkiya leitle de Rabbi Yanai. So now you're setting it up, basically, that Chizkiya and Rabbi Yochanan are arguing about this point. And that means now that Chizkiya does not subscribe to this position of Rabbi Yanai. Because he's saying by the sheretz, we don't assume that the sheretz is there. It sounds like he fundamentally disagrees with Rabbi Yanai. He says, no. Maya shrike, pere lo shrike. Water is slippery. Water moves easily. It flows. Pere lo shrike. Fruits or whatever items you have in the utensil don't come out so easily. That means that if you are pouring out the water, then you don't have to dump the bucket entirely for the water to leave the bucket. As soon as you tip it in that direction, all the water is going to come rushing out. That means that the sheretz wasn't under so much pressure to leave because it might have been a slight incline down and that's enough to get the water out, but the sheretz could stay in. By the fruits, you need to really turn it all the way over in order to get everything out. If you did that, the sheretz should have come out. The fact that it didn't come out shows you it wasn't there beforehand. That'll be the view of Chizkiya. Inami maya lo kopid alayu, peru kabid alayu. Or by water, the person isn't so particular to make sure that every drop comes out of the bucket. Tries to get it out in general, and therefore he doesn't tilt it or move it as far in the angle to get everything out, because he's just going to fill it again and dump it again. But by the payroth, where you want to get everything out, he's sure to tip the thing over totally. And in doing such, the sheretz should have come out. The fact that it didn't come out is evidence of the fact that it wasn't there beforehand. And that's how Chizkiya will agree with Rabbi Yanai, yet disagree with Rabbi Yochanan. By Rabbi Yanai, he's going to agree because that's water. By payroth, he's going to say that it's a different case by payroth. And therefore, there's more pressure for the sheretz to leave in that situation because of the way that people handle the baskets or the buckets in those situations with payroth. And therefore, if it didn't come out, that's evidence that it wasn't there beforehand. So Chizkiya will say there is no Tumah retroactively. Rabbi Yochanan will say there is Tumah retroactively. Now the Gemara says, V'i Bayitema. So now the Gemara is going to have a series of these I Bayitemas, which is, we said that Shammai and Hillel agreed that by a basket, there is Tumah. If you find the sheretz in there, there is Tumah lemafreya. Gemara said, at first, well, that's because there was a base in that basket. Yochanan and Chizkiya are arguing about when there's no base. The Gemara now are going to give alternatives as to where Shammai and Hillel agree, and therefore that the machloket Chizkiya and Rabbi Yochanan is in an alternate case. So here's the first of them, which is Kimodu Shammai veHillel bikupa shena b'duka. Hillel and Shammai are agreeing that the tumah is there, the mafreya, when you didn't check the kupa. It was a kupa ena b'duka. Kiplige Chizkiya Rabbi Yochanan bikupa b'duka. Where they argue is where you did check the basket, and you didn't find anything in it. Marsavar Pabatka, Chizkiya says you checked it. If you checked it, then obviously there was nothing in there, and so now when you utilize it and find a sheretz, that happened now and not retroactively. Marsavar Imor Imsilukia Do Nafal, that we assume that right after he checked it, the sheretz fell in there. So the check is great when you start it out, but that doesn't change the fact that as soon as you finish the check, it's possible that the sheretz entered. Therefore, we have to look retroactively back to the last time you checked it in order for there to be tuma. Didn't we bring before in the Braita when we spoke about Shammai and Hillel, and Hillel challenged Shammai? Over there, Shammai says by the kupa, I agree with you, but a woman is different. But that means that they think that there's a correlation between the woman and the case of the kupa. And the woman is considered to be duka, because as Rashi says over here, she checks herself morning and night, which makes it sound like even according to Shammai, she has to do this check twice a day. We'll discuss that later in today's daf. But that means that she's duka. If she's duka, then the case of the kupa is also a case of duka. That means Shammai and Hillel agree, even in a kupa duka, that there is a problem lemafreya of tuma. And that would be a problem for Chizkiya, who says that by a kupa, there is no tuma lemafreya. And now we're thinking that even by a case of kupa duka, Shammai and Hillel, so there is tuma retroactively. The Gemara answers, Kevin de shchichya ba damim, shena b'duka damya. Since a woman is want to see dam, it happens on a regular basis, it happens frequently, and she's mu'edit virigila, as Rashi said previously, to see dam. Therefore, she's considered as if she's ena b'duka. And that's why the machloket Shammai and Hillel was a case of kupa ena b'duka, similar to the woman. And here, Chizkiya and Rabbi Yochanan argue about a case of b'duka. V'vaitema. Another way to explain this is, kimodesh Shammai v'Hillel, when do Shammai and Hillel agree b'kupa shena mechusa? That's talking about a basket that's not covered. So now, the way that Rashi says it, ha v'ha v'b'duka. Both cases are cases of b'duka, meaning that both the case of Shammai and Hillel and Chizkiya and Rabbi Yochanan speak about a case where the check was done and the basket was checked. But now, we have a question as to what the character of this utensil is. According to Shammai and Hillel, it's a case where the kupa is ena mechusa. It's not covered. So therefore, there's a great chance, right after they had done the check, there's a distinct possibility that the sheretz fell in because it's an uncovered kupa. But according to Rabbi Yochanan and Chizkiya, say a case after you checked it and then it was covered. So then there's a low likelihood that a sheretz fell in before the point that you found it. Where it says, mechusa, hechinafal. Wait a minute. If it's covered, then how did the sheretz get in there at all? Kegon, shitashmisha, ayudei kisui. That the utility of this basket or this utensil is in a case where it is used when you have to open and close the cover. So therefore, there is a necessity to open and close the cover, which gives the possibility of a sheretz access to the utensil at some point. When you open it to use it, that's when it could have fallen in. And therefore, Chizkiya is going to say that the object is mechusa, and therefore there's a very low likelihood that the sheretz entered, and it must have entered at this last time that you opened it up. We don't expect it to be there beforehand. Then Rabbi Yochanan says, since each time you place the tarot in, you have to open it up, in one of those cases, it might have entered earlier, and therefore there is tuma lemafreya. V'adumia di shaktani. So once again, don't we say that again, that it is similar to a nisha? Visha mechusahi. And Isha is also considered to be covered. And Rashi says, strangely enough, da lo nafil badam mealma, that the woman's covered because it's like there's no dam that comes from the outside. Just like the basket, the sheretz can't get in from the outside when it's covered, only when you open it and close it. So too over here, the dam can't enter the woman from the outside. The Baal Tosafot are bothered by that because that actually makes it the other way around. It makes it worse. If there's no possibility of dam from the outside, that means whatever you found here clearly came from the inside and is clearly problematic dam. So that can't be the reason. So Tosafot brings, Achen yesh lomar mechusahi shemakom satum. The place where the dam is found, the mekor, the uterus, where the dam is found is sealed in. Shadam yotzei niftach. When the dam exits, it has to open. It has to allow for the egress of the dam. V'ayal al hargish. And she would have felt it. She would have known that it was leaving. That's what it means that the isha is mechusa. Just like the basket is mechusa, and the only access provided to the basket is when you open and close it, so too by the woman. Their blood is mechusa, going to Baal Tosafot. The only way it's going to open and let the blood out is if the woman feels or has the sensation that it's leaving. Therefore, she would be aware of it. So that's the problem now, which is, didn't we already establish in the Braita before that when Hillel questioned Shammai, and Shammai agreed to Hillel with regards to a kupa, but not by an isha, that they compared and contrasted an isha to the kupa, the isha mechusai, and we considered a woman to be covered. And if that's the case, then the case of kupa must also be covered. Then how does Chizkiah explain his position here, that by a covered kupa, we're going to say there's no tumah l'mafreya? Both Shammai and Hillel agree that there is tumah l'mafreya in a case of mechusa, based on the fact that it contrasted that with an isha, who's also considered to be mechusa. So how is Chizkiah going to reconcile those two things? So the Gemara says, Kevan d'shchichi badamim, k'shein mechusa damya. Since again, the blood of the woman has a frequency of dam being found, that's enough of a reason to say that she's like in a mechusa. That means that it provides access. There's something that provides access here, or provides that there is likelihood of dam coming, and so therefore she's deemed to be in a mechusa. And therefore the case of kupa, there's also in a mechusa. And that's why Chizkiah says that the woman doesn't give us any information about the case of the basket. The case of the woman is in a mechusa. That Hillel and Shammai agree that there's retroactive tuma by that type of basket. And I'm speaking about a case here where it's mechusa. And that's why I think there's a different outcome in the halacha over here. Then Chizkiah and Rabbi Yochanan could be arguing in mechusa, which is differentiated from the case of Hillel and Shammai where it's in a mechusa. Vibayitema, ki moda Shammai vehillel, bizavit kupa. That's when it's in the corner of the kupa. So that's the question of Shammai and Hillel, is you find the sheretz on one side of the kupa, and you're working on the other side of the kupa. Over there, we're going to assume that the sheretz was there for some time, and you missed it because it was in the other corner. You're working on this side of the kupa, the other side of the kupa has the sheretz in it. Ki plige Chizkiah v'Rabbi Yochanan. Chizkiah and Rabbi Yochanan are arguing about zavit bayit. The question when the basket was moved from one location to the other location. Va kupa kamar. Didn't the memra that we just started with was itmar kupa shenimshtav shmubav tarot bezavit zo benimsa sheret bezavit acheret? Speaking about the kupa, it's not speaking about the house. Hachi kamar, this is what it means. Kupa shenimshtav shubat tarot bezavit bayit zo vitel talua bezavit acheret, and they took it to another corner benimsa sheret bezavit acheret, and then they found the sheret in the other location. Chizkiah savar lo machzigin and tumami makom lemakom. Chizkiah says, we are not machzik tumah from location to location. We assume if you found tumah in this location, that's where the tumah happened. We don't assume it happened beforehand in another location. Rabbi Yochanan Savar, machzikinan. And Rabbi Yochanan says, we do. So the difference between the case of kupa and the case of the bayit is by the kupa, the sheretz is found in the kupa. So now, in the place where the sheretz is found, that's where we assume it's been all along. It's found here. We assume it's been there all along. Therefore, Shammai and Hillel agree that there is tumah l'mafreya in this basket, because I found a sheretz here, a place where the sheretz could have gone and caught up, and you would have missed it. It's on the other corner. It's in a case where it has this shulayim. And again, even if you checked it, it could have fallen in right after you checked it. And so, given all those factors, when you find it, we assume it's been there for some time. It just didn't enter right now. But in the case of Chizkiah and Rabbi Yochanan, you change the location of the basket. And now, on the changed location, you find a sheretz in there. Our assumption is going to be, according to Chizkiah, that the sheretz came when you put it into the new location. We don't assume it was in the basket, and then you moved it from one location to the other location, but rather fell in or came in the new location. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan says, well, you found it inside the basket. That means that it was in the basket beforehand. You just carried it from one location to the other locations. So it's a fundamental machloket as to whether we assume tumah moved from one location to the other location. Does that mean it was there all along and it moved? Or do we assume that if you're in a new location, it resets everything and therefore whatever's found here was here? So that's the machloket between Chizkiah and Rabbi Yochanan. Mima chazakinan, the Gemara says, wait a minute, is Rabbi Yochanan's position even tenable? Do we really believe that tumah moves from one location to the other, and we assume that when it went to the new location, it was there all along? That's not. We have a Mishnah. Naga bechad balaylo. Someone touched an individual at night. Ben yodayim chayim meit. There's no idea if the individual he touched that was next to him was alive or dead at the time that he came into contact with him. Ulamachari shkim. He gets up in the morning. Umatso meit. And he finds that whoever this person was that was next to him is actually passed away. Rabbi Meir mitayer vechamim mitamim. Rabbi Meir says he's tohor, Chamim says he's tamei. Shekol hatzmeot kishat mitziatan. The Chachamim say that every Tamei is like the time when you found it. Now you found this individual, and they are mate. That means that we assume that what you found was what existed beforehand, and since now you found a mate, he was mate all along. But Tani Ola, and we have a comment on that, a bright on that, Kishat Mitziyatan Ubimakom Mitziyatan, that there are two factors here, and both have to be true in order for you to be considered Tamei. That means that the individual must be found in the same location as where you came into contact with them, and we assume then that whatever you found them now was their state all along. So if here he touched somebody who was next to them at night, he has no clue at the time that he came into contact with them when they were alive or dead. In the morning he awakens, and in that exact location where he had touched that individual, sure enough there's a cadaver lying there, because whatever was there is still there. And we assume that the state that he's found in now was the state that he was in when he touched him. But there are two requirements over there. Two requirements are, number one, that it's makom mitziyatan. That's in the exact same location where he came into contact with it. And number two, it is, we make an assumption that the current state was the status quo all along. But that implies, had it been that you found this cadaver in another location, that it wouldn't have been tamei, even though you found him dead. And it's just moved over a little bit. We assume that that's somebody else or something else happened. He moved. That means maybe he was alive. Or maybe this is another individual. And the person he touched left. But you see that we're not makzik tuma, v'makom l'makom. The Tosfot Rosh over here asks an interesting question, which is, v'im tomar, ma'ishnameh de'eit shebenida, v'omrinen kol ha'tmeot, k'shat mitziyatan. Even according to Shammai, if you think that shat mitziyatan is a factor, then why don't we say also by the woman, when we find her to have dam, kishat metziata, she should be considered to be tmeya as if it was there from a while before. And then why does Shammai say daya shata? Or why don't we invoke this principle of shat metziatan? He says, v'chitema, if you want to answer, mishum the isha b'duka, that a woman is considered to be b'duka, and therefore there is no shat metziatan because there was always as if she was b'duka, that we already dismissed because chada came in the shchicha ba'damim lab dukahi. We already said that since damim are frequent with the woman, she's not considered to be b'duka. And we saw before in that mission that we brought, b'ra'u chai, even if you saw the individual alive, if in meshut yachid the safek arises, we still say safek meshut yachid is tamei or problematic. So over here too, why don't we say the same? But nearly dahach tocholat meyot kashat mitziyadama v'kimi 8-8, the davka lekodeshim ulechuma. So the first thing he says is that it's only applicable by kodeshim and truma, just like we know that tuma lemafreya is also only applicable by kodeshim and truma. And then he goes on to ask, even according to Hillel or others who say over here that there is tuma lemafreya, how come in the case of shat mitziyatan we assume that it's tuma vadait and we're soreif on it, and yet over here we're only toleb? So the answer is for that, the Eshlamar, the Mishum Piriya Rivya, Lo Ratzu Lachmir Lisrof. Because of their causing the individual to be Nokibo Nokfo, and not want to be with his wife, because we're burning Truma, as if it was Tamei Vadait, then this person's going to think, I don't want to be together with my wife, it's too risky, there are problems with that, and it's going to stop people from being together with their wives. And therefore, we only made it into Tuma Tzvuya, not Tuma Vadait, when there is Tuma signed retroactively, Kishat Mitziyatan. Some suggest that it has to do with the nature of the Safek. Shat Mitziyatan is only when you're talking about the object itself that is Tamei. If we find it Tamei, then we assume it was always Tamei. But not when we're talking about an object that is Tamei and therefore impacting on other items. We don't then say that it's Kishat Mitziyatan. Meaning that if we know something is for sure Tamei, we're just not certain if it had impact on other things, like the case of Nida, where the dam is definitely Tmeya. The question is, what impact it had on the woman beforehand? Then there, we're not going to say that it has a din of Shat Mitziyatan. V'chitema, if you want to say, Hani Mila Lisrof, that maybe over there, the reason that we say that it has to be Shat Mitziyatan and Makom Mitziyatan is because over there we want to determine that they're Tamei Vadai. And that means it can be Soreif Truma on it. Those are high standards or the thresholds you need to meet in order for it to be Tuma Vadait. Aval Litzlot Talinan. But maybe even without those factors, we would still be Talui that it was Tamei. And that's what Rabbi Yochanan is suggesting over here. That maybe not, it's not Tamei Vadai, just that it has Tumah Lemafreya, which is Tumah Midarabanan, and that Safek Midarabanan maybe exists even when you have Mimakom Lemakom. Mar says, Umitalinan. Do we really say that? Vatnan. Again, another Mishnah from Tarot. Machat Shinimtseit Mleya Kaluda. It's a whole machat, it's a whole needle, but it is rusted. O Shvura, or now it's broken, Tehora. Then it is considered to be Torah. Shekolat Meot Kishat Mitziatan. Because everything we find, we assume that that was the status quo even beforehand. The way Rashi explains this over here is that the object you know for sure was Tameh. This needle, you know it was Tameh. But now you found this needle lying on top of Tarot. Only difference is that the needle now is rusted or the needle is broken. And in that case, we assume that whatever you find it as now, that was its status all along. Now a broken needle is not mitame, it's not a kli anymore, it's ruined from its purpose. A needle that is rusted is no longer usable for its original utility, it's now ruined the kli that was there, it's no longer tame. So what Rashi explains is that the item you knew for sure was tame, but now that you find it in this state now where it is tahor, we assume that that was its state all along. And that's why the tarot remain tahorot, because we don't assume anything tame touched them. Others like the Rambam in the Parashat Mishnayot suggest that these are items where we don't know if they were Tameh or not Tameh, but we find them there, and now we can assume that it doesn't matter whether they were Tameh or not, because the state we find them in is a state where it is Tahor. Bamai, Lema, Haimi Ikara Machat Mal Yotahi. Why don't we assume that the original needle, we know for sure at some point was a good needle, Bahashtahu Dala Chaluda, and that it rusted in location. That would then imply that we're not makzik tuma mimakom lemakom. The needle where we find it now is where we assume it was, and we assume that the way you found it was the way it was all along. We don't assume just because the needle was functional at some other point and was tamei, that then these items are tameot. And over there we don't see that there's a safek tuma, there's a toloi. We say there that they are teorot legamrei. We don't assign any tuma to them. Veod, it's not. And we also have the following Mishnah, Matzah Sheretz Saruf, Agabe Zeitim. You find a sheretz that is consumed, that has been burnt up, that is on top of Zeitim. Mechen Matlit, Hamihu Ham, although the Girsa seems to be, you can see that in the Masorah of Shas, as well as in the notes in Rashi, that it was Hamihu Ha, that means from the word Tohu, that it was a Matlit that was worn down, or that was in tatters. It was something that was totally ruined, like we have by Breshit Tohu Vavohu. So it was something that was no longer, didn't have a semblance of its original purpose. So in that case, Tohor. Shekolat Tmeot, Kishat Mitziatan. So all of these Tmeot are like the way that you found them. This shows you that when we have these rules of Shat Mitziatan, we don't say that maybe they should be Safek Tameh. We say they are Tohorot. The Gamre, we're not just talking about a case where we say, like the threshold you said by the person that came into contact with the mate, there where we say, oh, it's Vadei Tameh, and he has to be Soreif. But over here, where we don't necessarily want to make it a Vadei Tumah, we just want to have to make it a Safek Tumah, maybe that would apply even if you move from Makom to Makom. Here we brought you samples of Mishnayot, where you have Shat Mitziatan, and the Mishnayot are telling you that they are to Horot the Gamre. We're saying that not only is Shat Mitziatan the Chumrah, but even Shat Mitziatan the Kula, which shows you we're not Choshesh at all. Once we say Shat Mitziatan, so then we say that whatever you find it now, that's the way it was. That is the Chumrah, in the case of the mate. It's also the Kula, in the case of the Machat, and in the case of the Tarot, where you found the burnt up sheretz. That shows you that Shat Mitziatan is absolute. Means that it works. If you find it now Tahor, it is Tahor, and we don't say any Safek Tumah. You find it's Tameh the Gamrei, and there's no in-between state that you can make a claim. Now, both of these Mishnayot only dealt with Shat Mitziatan. They did not deal with Makom Mitziatan. Our issue is whether you can be Maksim Tumah Mimakom LeMakom. The assumption of the Gemara here is that Kitzal Kadatcho, that whatever is true by Shat Mitziatan is also true by Makom Mitziatan. Like in the first Mishnah that we brought, where we said that it had to be true by Shat Mitziatan and Makom Mitziatan. That was the qualification for the individual to be Tameh. So now in the two subsequent Mishnayot that we brought, spoke about Shat Mitziatan, and the Gemara's assumption here is Shat Mitziatan and Makom Mitziatan are synonymous in terms of their din. they have the exact same requirements. And therefore, if over here you're going to make it tahor, that's tahor because shat mitziyatan and makom mitziyatan. And similarly in the next mission, shat mitziyatan and makom mitziyatan. But obviously that raises the possibility that you could say otherwise. And that's what the Gemara says here. Maybe b'chitim b'shat mitziyatan ben l'kula ben l'chumra. Maybe by shat mitziyatan we go to chumra, like the case of touching the cadaver at night. Or we go to kula, like the case of the machat and the sheretz. Or the case of the burnt up sheretz. So there we go to kula and the chumra kshat mitziyatam u'memakom mitziyatam. That's only true when it's in the place that you found them. Aval shalov imakom mitziyatam misraf lo sarfinan mitlatalinan. But if it's the change in makom, maybe change in makom has a different din. I mean, that's all true. All these cases of shat mitziyatam is only when you found them in makom mitziyatam. If the place where they're found is the same place where you're dealing with whether it's tamei or tahor. But maybe if shalom ikom mitziyatan, maybe it's in a place where you didn't find them, then maybe misraf lo sarfinan mitlatlanlinan. Maybe over there you wouldn't mafzik it as vadai tameh, but maybe we would consider it to be a safek tumah. You wouldn't burn it because it's not vadai tameh, but maybe over there we'd open the possibility of tumah. That's Rabbi Yochanan Shita. That by makom la makom, we open up the possibility. It's only b'shat mitziyatan that we go to kula. But makom mitziyatan, maybe we don't have that kula. Vatnan, the problem is, don't we have a mishnah, or likely it's a braita? Kikara ladaf, you have a loaf of bread up on a shelf. Umadaf, tamei munach taftav. And then there is a shelf below it that is tamei. Afa pishim nafla, even though if the bread fell off the first shelf, ifshar elim kenaga, it would be impossible for it not to fall into the shelf below it. Let's assume you have a narrower shelf on top and a wider shelf on the bottom. So if it was to fall off the top shelf, it would bounce on the other shelf and then fall to the ground. Tehora. We still say that it's tehora. Shani omer, because I say, Adam tohor nichnas l'sham v'natla. A person who was tohor entered there, took it off the first shelf, and then put it down on the ground. And therefore, it never touched the interim shelf, and it's not tamei. Achi omar, until the individual says, bari li shalom nichnas adam sham. Unless we know for certain no human being ever entered there, then we're going to assume it's tamei, because then it had to have bounced on the other shelf to get down. So Rashi explains over here, the first shelf is tahor, because it's not touching anything. Second shelf is tamei, because it's tumat madaf, which is actually a tumat that we find by zav. Zav is mitamei elyon ketachton, and zav is mitamei not only be yeshiva merkav, or what's known as midras, which is that when he sits on something, he lays on something, he rides on something, that he affects items below him, even not directly below him. He also has what's called el yonos shel zav. Things above a tumat zav also impact, and the things above it are tameh. Over there, there's a bigger kula, which is by midras. Things that are found below the zav are tameh, tumat, avatumah. They have the same tumah as the zav himself, and they gain a status of avatumah, and they can be mitamei, adam, kelim, and ochlim. On the other hand, elyonoshel zav does not have the status of the tachton, meaning it doesn't have the status of being an avatumah. It's only a rishon, the tumah. It's a lighter form of tumah. It's a tumah kala. And that's why it's called tumah madaf over here. We'll see that later in the Gemara. It's a lighter form of tumah, which is that it can be mitamei ochlim. It can't be mitamei adam v'kelim. That's why it uses this tumat madaf. So now here you have a situation in which you have a loaf of bread moving. It's going from the upper shelf. It's now found on the ground. So now how did it get to the ground? There are two possibilities. Either it fell off the shelf, bounced on the shelf below, and now it's on the ground. If it did that, it's tamei because it hit the shelf that was tamei. The madaf that was el yonoshel zav, it hit that, it was tamei. The other possibility is an adam tohor walked in, picked it up off the shelf and put it down on the ground below. And in that case, they would be tahor. And we assume that it is tahor. That shows you that we're not machzikin on tumah mi makom la makom. We assume that it got there, and it got there in a tahor way. And so now that you find it on the ground in a position where it's tahor, we assume it was tahor all along. We don't assume that it bounced on the shelf in between and became tameh. That shows you we don't worry about tumah mi makom le makom. This is a pretty definitive statement against Rabbi Yochanan's position that we're makzikan tumah mi makom nakom, because here we're not makzikan it lisrof, we're also not makzikan lisafek to say it's toleh. We say it's tahor legamrei. And if you say it's the Or Legamrei, that shows you we're not Maksik Tuma L'Makom Makom. Where does Rabbi Yochanan come up with this Shita that Maksikin Tuma Mi Makom L'Makom? The Baal Tosfot over here say this is a little strange, because every other case in the Shas where we have an individual coming in and we assume a human being intervened in the situation, we assume the person was Tamei. And we say, well, now the object's Tamei, because a person who was Tamei came in and moved it from this location to that location. Why over here all of a sudden do we assume that the person is Tahor, that came in here and moved it, rather than the person is Tamei? So the Rabbeinu Tam gives the first answer, which is, Teretz Rabbeinu Tam, the Gabe Kelim, by Kelim and Nimtzaim, Davka, Gazrina, Tuma, Yishum De'itlu, Tarab, and Mikveh. He says, all those other cases in Shas, the reason we assume that the individual is Tamei, is because when he comes into contact with the object, then that object, when it's Tamei, can be fixed, because you can put it in the mikveh. Over here, we're dealing with Ochlim. And therefore, if we make these Ochlim Tameim, there's no way to undo this, there's no way to rectify the situation. So by cases where it's Kelim, and you can rectify the situation, we assume the person who came in was Tamei. And therefore, he impacted on the Kelim, and you just deal with it by putting in the mikveh. On the other hand, by Ochlim, where if we make the person Tamei who came in, then we're going to ruin these Ochlim. So in that case, we assume it's an Adam Tahor that came in. What's interesting about that is that you have certain Kelim that can't go to the mikveh, like Kli Cheres. And despite that fact, according to this Rabbeinu Tam, they're going to be considered Tameim, or we're going to assume that an Adam Tameh came in. So that would somewhat undermine his position that it's a difference between whether there is a rectification or not. So you'll have to say on behalf of the Rabbeinu Tam that that is, despite the fact that there's no rectification, that we keep a standard policy. All Kelim, we assume the person was Tameh that came in. All Ochlim, we assume the person who came in was Tohor. So even though by Kli Cheres it has character or traits like Ochlin, where it can't become Tor B'mikveh, nevertheless, it's in the category of Kelim, and Kelim have that position. That's the view of the Rabbeinu Tam. On the other hand, the Baalei Tosafot offer an alternative answer, that is that there's a difference here versus other cases. In this case, it's Mukha Milta that whoever came in here was trying to prevent that problem. The reason they moved the loaf of bread from the upper shelf to the floor, or wherever they put it, is because if it had fallen off the shelf, it would have landed on this item that's Tamei. So he's taking preventative steps to remove it. Therefore, there's an impetus for someone who's Tahor to come in and change the status of the item, move it from where it is to another location. And therefore, we assume an Adam Tahor did it, because there's reason for it. But in general, when we're talking about Ochlim or Kelim, doesn't matter, because over in those cases, there's nothing to fix. They just moved it from one location to another. We just don't know who moved it. So in that case, we're going to assume an Adam Tamei moved it. Over here, where there's reason to move it, and the reason was to prevent the Tuma, in that case, we're going to assume that's an Adam Tahor that came in and moved it. That's the difference between this case and other cases. But what we definitely see from this case is that we're not Magzik Tuma, Makom Lemakom. V'amar Rabbi Elazar, Lo Nitzrecha Ela Makom Midron. And Rabbi Lazar also qualifies this and says that the case here is where the top shelf was on a decline of some sort. There was reason for us to believe that the loaf would fall off. And despite the fact that there's reason to believe that the loaf would have fallen off and landed on the ground, we still say or assume that an individual came in and moved it. So despite the fact that there's even circumstantial evidence that the loaf might have fallen off because of the fact that it was on a slant, and that it's likely to fall off, nevertheless, despite the lower probabilities, we assign that to a person coming in who was Tahor and moving it down. That shows you we clearly are not Magzik Tuma Makom LeMakom. My answer is Hotam Kintatani Taima. Over there, the reason is written. Shani Omer Adam Tahor Nichnas L'Sham V'Natla. Over there, I can explain what happened. A person who was Tahor came in and moved the loaf from the top shelf down to the ground. By our case over here, there's no reason to believe that somebody got involved. So Gemara says, why not? Hakanami, you're right. A person may not have got involved. Hakanami nema oreiv ato vishada. Over here too, we can come up with a situation in which there's another party involved, which is nema oreiv ato vishada. Let us say here that the oreiv showed up and put it in there. Just like we have a human being that could have moved the loaf from the upper shelf down to the floor, we can also say that an oreiv came and moved the sheretz and placed it into the basket. If that's the case, we can assume that the sheretz showed up in the new location. The oreiv was the one who brought it in the new location. And therefore, we don't have to assume that the Sheretz was there originally, and then you moved it to the new location. Mar says, no. Adam de mikavana amrinon. A person who has intent, a person who has reason to engage with these items, and would do something like that, there we say, or there we assign the situation to a person that could have done something consciously. Orev shelo mikavana. Here we do in the orev, where it have to be something that he does unintentionally, lo amrinon. We don't say it. So when we're trying to explain the situation, we explain the situation in a case that's quasi-plausible. It might be a low probability that a human being came in there, but if a human being came in there, it would make sense that he moved the loaf from on top down to below, again, because there's reason for him to believe that there's something amiss here, and that he wants to fix it, and therefore he moves it from the upper shelf to the bottom onto the floor or away from the other shelf. But in the case of the orev, you're now just taking a low probability situation, which is that an orev jumped it in, and you're saying that he did it unintentionally. So that even drops the probability significantly more, because you're trying to come up with this far-fetched situation in which the orev dropped it into the basket on the other side. Therefore, Rabbi Yochanan is going to say, you're right. In the situation where there could have been a human intervention. But in a case where there's no human intervention, we're not going to assume that because there's a sheretz in the basket in this corner, that it wasn't there beforehand. It was there beforehand, and that's how it got there. We're not going to assume some orev dropped it in newly at this point in time. So Mar says, Michtei, ha-kikar sefek tuma b'rishut ha-yachidu. Wait a minute. This kikar is a sefek tuma that's found in Rishut ha-yachid. B'chol sefek tuma b'rishut ha-yachid, sfek ha-tamei. That's what we learned from Sota. That whenever you have a case of sefek tuma b'rishut ha-yachid, sfek ha-tamei. Why don't we say that by this loaf of bread as well? You have two possibilities how the loaf got to the ground. It either fell, and if it fell, it for sure landed on the item that was tamei, and that's how it got to the ground. Or a human being came in and moved it from the upper shelf to the floor, and it would have been tahor. Safek, tuma, this is Rishut HaYachid. Why don't we assume that it is tamei? Rashi over here says that this question is not just about this case. He says, V'yechid deparach hakikar. Just like they're asking this about the loaf of bread, matzah mifrach ha-machat ve'ha-matzlit. He says, so too, we could have asked the question on the Mishnah about the machat and the Mishnah about the matzlit. Why in those two cases do we say they're tahor when there's a safek there? Even though we're machzik tumak shat mitziatan, there still is a safek. So you're using a chazokah to determine what the outcome is of that safek. But there is a safek. If there is a safek, why don't we say safek tumak b'shut yachid? Tamei. So Rashi says that the question applies across the board to all of these cases here. The case of the bread, as well as the case of the machat, and the case of the matlit, the item that was burnt up on top of the tarot. Others suggest that there's a difference, that the case here by the bread or the kikar is more problematic because the safek is much higher. Because by the case of the kikar, it's a tuma vada'it. We know there's tuma here, it's just a question of safek naga, safek no naga, which is your classic case of sota, safek naga, safek lo naga. In the other cases of the machat and the madlit, there is no tuma vada'it over here. The way we find the objects right now, they are tehorim. And therefore, we don't have any vada'it tuma. It's a safek tuma, not just a safek maga and not maga, because it's actually a vada'it maga, but it is a safek whether you even had tuma here at all. And therefore, they're not relevant to the case of sota. The Gemara says, Mishum Davi Davar, Shein Bo Toto Lishael. And therefore, when it's ain't that told Yishael, it doesn't matter if it's Rishut Rabim or Rishut Yachid, there is no Tuma if it's a Safek. Another exemption for Tuma is when the items that are involved, you can't ask them what happened. If you have a human being that's involved with the Safek, that told Yishael, since you can ask them what happened, therefore, Safek O Tameh. Because the paradigm of Tuma or Safek Tuma is Sota. In the case of Sota, the reason it is Bishut Yachid is Tamei is because that's where the incident of the Sota happened. And when it happened in a secluded location in Rishut Yachid, over there we assume that the woman is Tmeya. She's considered to have violated her marriage. And therefore, she now is not allowed back to her husband until she drinks Tamei Sota. So we take a safek tuma and assume that it's a vadai. Rishut Rabim, there is feko tahor, is because there is no stira, Rishut Rabim. And therefore, the sota is clearly not a case of Rishut Rabim, and in Rishut Rabim, Safek Tuma is Tehora. So now, in terms of the Safek Tuma Rishut Yachid, over there, the woman knows what happened. We don't know what happened, but she clearly knows what happened, and therefore, you could have asked her. She may not be telling us the truth. She may be telling us the truth. She's not giving us the information, but she knows. From there, that paradigm tells us that only in cases where you can ask the outcome or what happened, then do we say that safek tumah b'shut yachid is tameh. But if the objects involved are not things that you can ask or speak to and get information from, in that case, we do not say safek tumah b'shut yachid is tameh. And that's the distinction here. The case here is a loaf of bread that fell possibly by itself to the ground. The only thing you could ask is the bread. And the bread doesn't have an ability to answer our question. Therefore, it's not like sota. And therefore, even if it's a safek tumah b'shut yachid, it's not going to be tameh. And according to Rashi, the same will be true by the case of machat, and the same will be true by the case of matlit. Those are objects that you can't ask. It's not a safek tumat maga. We're not sure if a person came into contact with the item, didn't come into contact with the item. There you have a party that's involved, shidato lishel. If a human being involved, who you could ask? Now, they may not know the answer, but still, because it's someone who could answer a question, if they had the knowledge, then that's similar to sota. But in a case where the parties involved are not people that you could ask, then that is not safek tumah b'shut yachid, that is similar to sota, and therefore ein sfeko tameh. That's how the Gemara gets out of that problem. Now the Gemara says, ve'i bayitema. Some say over here, hacha betuma dirabanan. We're dealing with tuma that's only of a rabbinic nature, dekanami, and I can show you that's true, diktani madaf. Because if you use the term madaf, kidichtiv ale nidaf. So we already spoke about the fact that this is a lighter form of tuma. At first, the way Rashi explained it before, madaf was a tuma de'oraita, but a lighter form of tuma de'oraita. That's why I use the term madaf. Over here, the Gemara is saying, yeah, madaf means a lighter form of tuma, but not tuma de'oraita, tuma midirabanan. And I can prove to you that it's tuma midirabanan, because the term madaf comes from the terminology alei nidaf. Alei nidaf means a blown leaf. It's something that is light. It's something that gets moved around involuntarily. And the Rambam says that the word nidav comes from like reach nodef, which means something that's very ephemeral, something that is short-lasting, something that is just in passing. And so to Amir, this is a lighter form of tuma. This is not tuma midoraita, it is a tuma midrabanan. Interesting enough, the Rambam in the Mishnah in Zavim, where this is from, says that this part of the Gemara that says Alei Nidaf was added in afterwards. It was not a part of the Gemara. It was a notation by the Rabbanan Soberai that got later on added into the Gemara, but it's not really from the Gemara itself. And therefore, it's just a added interpretation or trying to explain why Madaf means Tuma Kala. But the original Gemara just read, Dekanamini Tani Madaf, the word Madaf itself is an indication of lighter form tuma derabanan, and the proof text is added on afterwards. Is not the lashon haGemara. Now, according to the Bali and Tosfot, Rashi is saying the ibayitema is even if it was dato lishel, even if it was something that you could have asked about. Nevertheless, you still can't prove anything from this because here we're dealing with tuma derabanan, and since it's tuma derabanan, therefore, the reason that sfeiko is not tamei over here is because it's a safek derabanan and not a safek d'oraita. Safek derabanan is l'kula, even though it's b'shut yachid, even if it was a dato lishel. Tosafot does not like that explanation, which he assigns to Rashi. Rashi never says that. Tosafot infers it. According to Rashi, it's a continuation of the answer to how come it's a safek tumah b'shut yachid. Why isn't it tamei? So the answer is, ain't dato lishel. And then Ibai Demez, even if it was that only shell, we still wouldn't have said it. It's Safek Tumah, B'shut Yachid Chumrah, or Tameh, because it's Tumah Midrabanan. That's how Rashi reads it. On the other hand, the Bali Tosafot read it, the Ibai Demez going back to the Mishnah itself, saying that it's an Adam Tahor that moved it off the top shelf to the ground. And he thinks that it has nothing to do with that only shell, because that's not realistic over here. There is no dato lishel. In the end, it's a loaf of bread that fell on the floor. There's no dato lishel. So why would the Gemara say, eat by itema if it is dato lishel? The case here is clearly not a case of dato lishel. Hella, that even if you do not want to assign it to an Adam Tahor, you think that the case of someone walking in and taking it off the shelf and putting it on the ground was an Adam Tahor is far-fetched, and you want to say that that's a difficult explanation for why it should be Tahor over here, because Nefilah is a much higher probability, and therefore it should be Tmeah. It's almost Karov the Vadai. Then, Ibai Deima, don't worry about it, because over here we're dealing with Tuma Midrabanan. And since it's Tuma Midrabanan, therefore we will assign low probability case that it was an Adam Tahor that moved the bread to explain the situation. And since it's Tuma Midrabanan, there we're more likely to assign that to an Adam Tahor, even though it's a low probability case. Right now, the Gemara moves on to the Chachamim's position in the Mishnah. But Chachamim Amrim, lo k'divrei zeh, not like Shammai, lo k'divrei zeh, not like Hillel. Tanav Rabbanan, Chachamim Amrim, lo k'divrei zeh, lo k'divrei zeh, lo k'divrei Shammai, shelo asay sayag l'dvarav. Not like Shammai, who says, dayash shatan, there's no retroactive truma, because he makes no fence. He creates no extension, either Rabbanan, to protect against these tmeot, and that's not a palatable position to have. Beloka divrei Hillel, and not like Hillel, she frees Almidotav, who was way too exaggerative, or his position is too far-fetched. Which is, the word paraz comes from like the area prazot, means unwalled cities. Unwalled cities are not bound. They just can expand wherever they want, because there's nothing that limits their expansion. So over here, he frees Almidotav, Hillel has an unlimited amount of time in which the Tuma can work retroactively. It's until the last time you did a check. That could be a week ago. That could be 2 weeks ago. That seems far-fetched. Ella, the position of the Chachamim is, me'et le'et, 24 hours, me'ma'etet ayad, me'pikidah, b'kidah. That reduces it from the last check. So, you have 24 hours is the maximum amount of time, even though there was a check that was longer ago. The 24 hours would be the guiding principle. And if you did a check within the 24 hours, that would reduce the 24 hours down to the last time you did a check. And again, the way you express it is, it's the lesser of 24 hours or the last time you did a check. 24 hours reduces the time from the last check. What's an example of that? How does that work? She did a check on herself on Sunday. Umatzat tehora, and she found herself tehora. V'yashba sheni v'shlishi v'lod badka. Monday, Tuesday, she doesn't do any check. And then, the revi'i badka, she checks herself on Wednesday. Umatzat tmeya, and now she finds herself tmeya. Ein omrim titame b'kidah l'b'kidah. We're not going to say like, Hillel, go all the way back. Anything until back till Sunday now is tamei. Elimate late. The maximum amount of time is 24 hours. And that means 24 hours ago from wherever she found it on Wednesday, anything she did in the time period between the time she found it and 24 hours ago, that will be Tamei. But beyond that, that's not Tamei. That's how Meit Leit reduces Mibikidah Bikidah. Umibikidah Bikidah Meted Ayad Meit Leit. Ketzad, how is the scenario, what's the scenario whereby a check can reduce the 24 hours? Katzma Bishari Shona, she checked herself in the first hour of the day. Umatzat Torah, and she found everything to be fine. Veshvala Shnia V'Shlishit, second hour, third hour of the day, she doesn't do any check. Velo Badka, no check there. Urvit Badka, and then the fourth hour of the day, she does a check. Matzah Tmeah, and now she finds herself to be Tmeah, she finds Dam there. Ein Omrim Titameh Me'et Le'et, we don't say, oh, now she found it, 24 hours, the last 24 hours are now considered to be problematic. Ela Me'pikidah Le'pikidah, we only go back to the first hour of the day where she found herself Torah. So the maximum amount of time that she's Tmeah is from this fourth hour back to the first hour where she checked, which is way lower than 24 hours. Mar says, Pshita, given the Badka Tzma B'Shar Rishona, Umatzat Torah, Lo Matanina La Meit Leit. Wait a minute, who would ever think that if she checked herself on the first hour of the day and you find herself to be Torah, that you would still say that 24 hours retroactively she is Tmeah? It makes no sense. She does a check, and she's Torah. How can you make a claim now retroactively she was Tmeah for 24 hours? So that part of the Mishnah, or that part of the position of the Chachamim, seems to be Pshita, which is that, yes, the 24 hours reducing the amount of time from check to check, that's a reasonable kula, or position of the Chachamim. But to say that the check reduces the 24 hours, that's obvious. Everybody agrees that a check is a good enough position. Even Hillel, who says you have to go back retroactively to the last check, that's all he says. He only says you have to go back to the last check. So of course a check would reduce the 24 hours. Since the Mishnah said in the position of the Chachamim that 24 hours reduces the amount of time versus the last check, so it also, in a parallel structure, says that a check will reduce the 24 hours. Even though that's pshita, even though that's obvious, it's still included it in the position of Chachamim to say, just like by the case of 24 hours, it reduces the amount of time from the last check, so too the check reduces the from the last 24 hours, even though I would have known that had you not said it, it just creates a parallel structure in the position of the Chachamim. Amar Rabba, my time of the Rabbanon. What's the reason behind the Rabbanon's position? Isha Margeshet Batzma. They believe that a woman feels the dam that comes out. She senses the dam that's coming out. And therefore, like we said in Shammai's position, he disagrees with Hillel and says you can't go back to the last check because she would have known or had she had dam to go back retroactively. Amar Abaye, Abaye, Talmid Rabba says to him, Im kein tein dayah shata. If that's what the Chachamim believe, then why don't they hold like Shammai? That it's enough whenever she cites the dam to be prospectively Tumea, but retroactively there is no Tuma. So Rabba, Rabba was testing Abaye to see if he was on the ball, he was sharp, he was listening, and he said something that wasn't true of the Chachamim's position, because if you believe that, they should hold like Shammai. And we know they don't hold like Shammai. So then what is the real reason behind the Rabbanon's position? The Chachamim instituted a takana that women should check themselves twice a day. Once in the morning, once in the evening. The reason for that is shachrit, lachshir, tarot, shalayla. She checks herself in the morning to know that anything she worked on the night before is tohora because she found herself tohora in the morning. So all the tarot that she did until that point in time are fine. So she checks in the morning in order to clear up that anything she did before that was fine, varvit, and she does it in the evening, lakshir tarot shoyo, in order to say that anything that she did during the day was good. So every 12 hours you do a check in order to be sure that the previous 12 hours were okay. So if you do a check in the morning, you've now cleared up the 12 hours of nighttime. If you do a check in the evening, you've cleared the 12 hours of the daytime, and so on and so forth to make sure that tarot. And then when you find it, you only have a small window of time in which you have the tum'ah, because now you found it, and the last check was 12 hours ago. Now, it would seem that Shammai doesn't have this takanah, because he doesn't believe there's any tum'ah mimafreya. Although Rashi, back on the Amud Aleph, seems to indicate that even Shammai has this takanah of shachrit and arvit. The reason that he would have it is because Shammai is relying on a cheskat tara of the woman. And what we want to do is reestablish that cheskat tara all the time. And we do that by having you check shachrit varvit. So that keeps intact this cheskat tara of the woman. So even though, as Hillel says, that a woman has a regular occurrence of dam, or she is mu'edet to see dam, nevertheless, if you keep checking, that keeps reestablishing the cheskat tara of the woman. This individual, this woman, since she skipped doing a check, we make her lose an ona. Now, the time period of an ona, here according to Rashi, is 12 hours. We're going to deal with it later on in the Masechta about exactly what the duration of an ona is. But the assumption over here is that the ona, the time that's considered to be a period of time, is 12 hours. And we know that because the Chachamim made her check in the morning and check in the evening. That means every 12 hours, she's checking. So now, as Rashi calls it a kanas, a penalty for her not checking, we then say the previous ona was problematic. According to others, similar to a kanas, we say that the previous 12 hours were problematic. Mar says, my ona. Why does it matter ona? Ona is true even if she did check. Even if she checked and found that she had dam, she would have to then forfeit anything that went from the previous 12 hours, we assume is tmeya. So what have you added when you said, oh, when she doesn't do a check, she loses the previous ona. She always loses the previous ona, whether she checks or doesn't check, because when she finds herself tmeya, then she loses that ona. Where it says, ona yitera, an extra 12 hours. Which means that if she checks herself and finds herself tmeya, then the last 12 hours are problematic, according to everyone or every situation, because she did a check in the morning, now she did a check in the evening. The check in the morning declared her tahor, check in the evening made her tmeya. So we're going to assume retroactively from when she found it back to the last check, she is tmeya. That's an ona. So everybody has that. No matter whether she did a check in the morning or didn't do a check in the morning, the last 12 hours are problematic. What we're saying now is if she didn't do a check, and then she finds herself Tmeah, the Chamin penalized her an additional 12 hours because she didn't do the check. And that means 24 hours beforehand, the Mafreya, we're going to assume she is Tmeah. Had she done the check properly in the morning, she would have only lost 12 hours. Now that she skipped the check in the morning and only did the check at night, she loses the previous 24 hours, the Onah that she's in because she found herself Tmeah, and an additional Onah retroactively to say that she is problematic. Samalei Rav Papa, the Rabba, wait a minute. You're telling me that they penalized her with an extra onah. Sometimes within 24 hours, you're covering three onot. If an onah is the 12-hour period from morning to evening, evening to morning, morning to evening, if in the middle of the day on Wednesday she had a bdikah and found dam, or she cited dam then 24 hours ago was the middle of the day on Tuesday. That's crossing through three onot. One onah is that day itself, till the morning of that day to the previous night, and the previous night till the middle of the day on the previous day, which is 24 hours ago, that's three onot. So now if you're telling me the penalty was an extra onah, there's sometimes where she's being penalized, three onot. Answer of Rava is, Hishru Chachamim Midotehem. The Chachamim put their position in a way that it was objective and not subject. Shlo tachlok v'me'et le'et. So there'd be no distinction, May 8. May 8 is 24 hours. There are times where 24 hours is 2 onot. There are times where 24 hours is 3 onot. But they didn't make any distinction because of the problem of skipping one bidikah, but then open up the window of 24 hours being a problem. So then it doesn't matter when she sees it. We just assume 24 hours retroactively she was Tmeah, even though that might cross over 3 onot, and the original intent was to penalize her 1 onah. That's it. We have a standard form, and the standard form is 24 hours, no matter how many onot it crosses over. Because otherwise, the person who didn't do the check is actually benefiting from it because they did something wrong, and now they're making out in a better way. Because had a woman not done a check for many days, and then she did a check in the morning, and she found herself Tmeah, then we're going to penalize her 2 onot. And those 2 onot would be 12 hours before to the night before, 12 hours to the morning before. So 24 hours. So that's the person who did a check. This woman, who after a number of days not checking, didn't check in the morning either. And she only checked in the afternoon. Now you're going to tell me she's only penalized 2 onot. Then the first onah is from when she checked in the afternoon to the morning. And then the next onah is from the morning to the previous evening. That means she's going to have like 18 hours of problem, not 24 hours of problem. That means that the more time she took to do the check, the better off she ended up. That means that choten iskar, the longer she waited to do a bedikah, the better off she was. And we don't want that to be the outcome. We want to be that if you wait, the longer you wait, you still have a problem. And similarly over here, if the woman does the check in the afternoon, she's going to have 3 onot of problems. Even though 24 hours covers 3 onot, we're still going to penalize her because otherwise she's going to benefit from the fact that she didn't do the morning check. So she skipped an additional check. And therefore now she should get benefit from that. The woman who does the check in the morning loses 24 hours. She only loses 18 hours. That doesn't make sense. And therefore the Chachamim assigned 24 hours to everybody so that a chute will not be niskar. Mabinayu, what's the nafkamina between these two cases? In a case where there was extenuating circumstances and she couldn't do the check. According to the one who says that it's chute niskar, sure she's not a chute. It was an accident, it was out of her control that she didn't do the bidikah, and therefore we wouldn't penalize her, and we'd say that it's only 2 onot, whatever that maximum amount of 2 onot is, and we would not go to a third onah. So it would be 18 hours, not 24 hours. According to the view that says that it was a standardized policy of 24 hours, doesn't matter why you missed the bidikah. As long as you missed the bidikah, then we're going to just say that then 24 hours ago is the maximum amount of time and the minimum amount of time, and you have 24 hours no matter what. So that would be the difference between those two reasons as to why the Chachamim assigned 24 hours, even if it's going to cover 3 onot. Kol isha sheyesh la veset. The Mishnah says that any woman that has a standardized cycle, that means that 3 times she's had sightings at the same time, then we said, dayashata. If she checks and finds the dam now, we assume it happened then on the timely fashion that she's already established, and she doesn't have any tuma, the mafreya. Lema matznitan rabbi dotsahi. Let us say that our Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Dosa. Velo Rabbanan and not the Rabbanan. De Tanyo, because we have a Braita, even though it's a Mishnah as well, we're going to say the Tanya because over here it gives more explication than the Mishnah. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, it's a Mishnah upcoming on Daf Zayin. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Abba Nashim Dayan Shatan. There are four women who don't have to worry about Tumah L'Mafreya. Whenever they have a setting Adam, we assume that that's when it happened and it's only a prospective problem. Bitula. Bitula is a woman who has not just not had intercourse. It could be a woman who's had intercourse already. Bitula is a woman who has yet to have a menstrual cycle. So a woman has yet to have a menstrual cycle. When she has it for the first time, we assume whenever she cited it, that's when it happened and not previously. Meuberet, a woman who's pregnant. We assume then that she's Mesulekit Damim. She doesn't have a menstrual cycle, and therefore she has the setting of dam during her pregnancy. We assume it happened then, and it wasn't any retroactive dam. Menika, a nursing woman, also who has a suspended menstrual cycle when she nurses. From the Gemara's perspective, it's because dam na'akar v'aseh chalav, that dam is changed from being menstrual dam into chalav, into the milk that the mother is feeding. The medical reasons today are because of the hormones that are produced by the nursing. They cause a suspension of the menstrual cycle as a kena, and a woman who has reached the time of menopause, where she no longer is having regular menstrual cycles, again there, she has a setting of dam, dayashata. Rabbi Dosa Omer, kol isha sheyesh la veset, dayashata. Rabbi Dosa disagrees and says, not just those four women, do they have a din of dayashata, that in whatever you see the dam, prospectively tumah, retroactively no tumah, even women who have a regular cycle, or on that same position. Any woman has an established regular cycle is no different than these other women. So now it would sound like our Mishnah is Rabbi Dosa, because in our Mishnah it talks about a woman is Dayashata, is a woman who has a regular cycle. It says, no, filo Dayama Rabbanan. Even the Rabbanan can be authors of our Mishnah. Adkan lo pligi Rabbanan le Dosa. The Rabbanan only argue in Rabbi Dosa, elo shelo b'shat vesta. That's when she has a sighting not on her regular cycle. But if they see the sighting was at the time of her regular cycle, they agree with him. So what they're suggesting over here is that the Rabbanan fundamentally agree with Rabbi Dosa that a woman who has a regular cycle and sights at the time of the regular cycle, everyone agrees that there's no Tumah L'Mafreya. Where they argue is where a woman who has a regular cycle sees off cycle. What's the din? Rabbi Dosa still says that, Dayashata. Whereas the Chachamim say, no, there we're going to assume a retroactive Tumah, because it didn't happen at the regular cycle. That already implies there's something different here. There's something amiss. And therefore, we don't assume that the quote-unquote guest or orach bizmano ba, that the cycle happens at its regular time. Umatznitan b'shat vesta b'divrei hakol. And our mission is talking about a case where it's her regular cycle. Therefore, according to everyone, it's dayashata. Michlau. From this, you would infer that Rabbi Dosa afilu shelo b'shat vesta amar. So then that means that Rabbi Dosa would be the one who also says, even off-cycle, dayashata. Even when it's not on a regular cycle, we would assume that she is dayashata and there's no retroactive tumah. And then obviously when we're talking about off-cycle, we're talking about that she checked early and found the dam. Not in a case where she found the dam late. I mean, she didn't check the time of her veset and then check later and found the dam, because there is a huge chazaka that she sees on time. Therefore, when she finds blood after the time of her veset, you can assume that it happened at the time of the veset. So, ma'atana lahat tatarabanan. But then, who's the author of the following braita? Isha sheyeshla veset, a woman who has a regular menstrual cycle, kitma tamei lemafreya. If she sees a stain on her clothing, that has tuma retroactively. Shimin tere shalobashat vesta mitama me'eteit. Because if she sees off-cycle, she's mitamei retroactively. So what the Gemara says is, just like when you're off-cycle, we assume there's tumah l'mafreya, so too, by the case of ketem, a stain on the clothing, we're also going to assume there's retroactive tumah. Now the ketem is tamei l'mafreya, according to Rashi, until the last time that you laundered that clothing, because that's the last time for sure you knew that there wasn't any tumah there, because the stain is new, and there wasn't a stain last time you laundered it, and that'll be the retroactive time that we will assume tumah. Although you could easily have seen that it would be mitkida lepkida, which means that the beged is tumeya, the beged assumes tumah lemafreya from the ketem, until the last time the beggar was checked. Last time the beggar was checked and we did not cite something on it, that would be the last time that we could assume Tara, and then retroactively it'd be Tmeya back until that point in time. All the Tarot that she dealt with until that time would be considered to be Tmeyot. And that would mean now, according to the Chachamim, even though by a Ri'iyah, they only have a maximum retroactive Tuma of 24 hours, by the case of the Ketem, it could far exceed that. And that's the way the Rambam paskins. And the distinction would be that by Dam and Ri'iyah, the amount of time for it to move from the uterus to externally in the woman, the maximum of time that the blood is held up is for 24 hours. It can't be held up more than that. And that's why there's a maximum retroactive Tuma, 24 hours. But by the Beged, it's something that people necessarily pay attention to or see right away. And that's the case that it could be Tmeya, the Mefreya, all the way back until the last check or the last kibbutz, the last time it was laundered, and therefore that could exceed 24 hours. Although there are others that just say that it's up to a maximum of 24 hours, and the Ketem has the same din as the Ri'iyah, and that it is the lesser of kibbutz or Pegida and Me'eglet. But that means that whoever is saying this over here clearly believes that off-cycle, you do have Tuma Lemafreya. So now you said, or the way you establish it now, is that Rabbi Dosa thinks even off-cycle, there is no retroactive Tuma. That means Neima Rabbanan Evelo Rabbi Dosa. That means that that Braita is only true according to the Rabbanan, not true according to Rabbi Dosa, because Rabbi Dosa thinks even off-cycle, there is no Tuma Lemafreya. I says, no, Afilu Teima Rabbi Dosa. Even according to Rabbi Dosa, I can no plegi Rabbi Dosa alayu de Rabbanan l'bishat vesta. Rabbi Dosa only argues on the Chachamim if she cites on cycle. But it's off cycle. He agrees with them that it is retroactive Tuma. Well, if that's the case, then that means the Chachamim even argue b'shat vesta. Even when she sees it on a regular cycle, still they believe there's Tuma l'mafreya. That means umatnitan b'shat vesta. Rabbi Dosa, that means that our Mishnah clearly is only authored by Rabbi Dosa, and not the Chachamim. That's what we were trying to avoid before, saying that the Mishnah was Rabbi Dosa. Ubraita divrayakol. But the Braita can be everyone's position. Both the Chachamim, who think there is retroactive Tuma, and Rabbi Dosa, who thinks when she's off cycle, there is Tuma Limafreya. Where it says, Vulukma Ipcha. Why are you assuming that the Braita is divrayakol, and the Mishnah is Rabbi Dosa? Why not do it the other way around, like we did originally? That the Mishnah is divrayakol, and the Braita is only according to the Rabbanan. Came in the Ikma, the Ukme, the Kula, or the Chumra Mukminan. Because you have a choice here to go the Kula or the Chumra. If you assign the Mishnah to be Divrei HaKol, that's a Kula, because that means both the Chachamim and Rabbi Dosa believe when you're on cycle, and you have a sighting on cycle, no Tuma L'mafreya. Off cycle, that's where they argue. The Chachamim say, off cycle, there is Tuma L'mafreya. Rabbi Dosa says, no. That's a position, that's the Kula. That's the original way we wanted to explain it. Now that we know the Braita, and we say, well, if we can make the Braita Divrei HaKol, that actually will end up being the Chumrah. Because that means that the Braita that says off-cycle, there's always Tuma L'mafreya, means both Rabbi Dosa and the Chachamim agree to that. That's a Chumrah in Rabbi Dosa's position. And then we'll just say the Mishnah is only according to Rabbi Dosa, because the Chachamim disagree. By even which has the citing on cycle that there is Tuma L'mafreya, because Rabbi Dosa is the only one who says that there is Dayashata. So that's also the Chumrah, because now we're making it that Yachid as the position in our Mishnah and not the Chachamim's position. Dosa would ask over here, then what was the Gemara thinking originally? Why did the Gemara make the Mishnah Divrei HaKol if it knew that there was a Tzad Chumrah and a Tzad Kula? Why did it go to Kula and make the Mishnah the Divrei HaKol? The answer to that is exactly that. If I have an option to make a Mishnah Divrei HaKol versus making it a Dat Yachid, I'd rather make the Mishnah Divrei HaKol. So originally we thought, we'll make the Mishnah Divrei HaKol, even though it's Lekula. As soon as we had the Braita opened up the possibility that there has to be a Dat Yachid in one of the two locations, either in the Mishnah or in the Braita. So now I have to choose, where do I make the Dat Yachid? The answer to that is I'm going to go to Chumrah and not the Kula. And making the Chumrah means I make the Braita the Divrei HaKol, and I make a Mishnah the Dat Yachid, and therefore Rabbi Dosa is the only one who will fit into our Mishnah, and that is that when we have Wushat Vesta, it's Dayashata, that is only according to the Shita of Rabbi Dosa. Chachamim disagree that even if she has a Veset Kavua, Even if she sees on that vesit, there's still Tumah Limafreya. Okay, we're going to stop here, three lines down on the top of Hey Amud Aleph.